The headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. How is your money? Well, depending on your age, it may be better for some than it is for others. A recent study by TD Bank found that millennials are the most transparent generation when it comes to talking about finances in their relationships compared to older generations. But do millennials do it better when it comes to their finances? Well, joining me to talk about this are financial coach LaShawn Holland and journalist and social media influencer Langston Vincent, the media prince. He is also a millennial. He is green, we could say. Lines are open if you have a comment or question at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. LaShawn and Langston, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. Oh, a duet. LaShawn, you and your husband have millennials.
We absolutely do.
So how are they doing with their money?
Both of them are in totally two different spectrums. Mm-hmm. I have one son who is an avid options trader. And so he believes that he can spend whatever he wants because it's easy for him in a day to make 200% on his money in the market. And he thinks he's good. My younger son loves to save. And so he saves a lot of his money. He's very, very great with his money. He's a planner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I need to back up for a moment because you said something that really struck me. I have one son who is an avid options trader. I didn't even realize that that was the kind of vocabulary that that millennials are using. But that would suggest that they are. How was your options trading when you were in your 20s?
Well, I didn't have it. It wasn't an option for me in my 20s.
Exactly.
And so that's the advantage that a lot of the millennials have. The positioning of where they are in life is because of Generation X. Mm-hmm. And the previous generation. He's had the luxury of growing up in a household where money was a conversation in my house absolutely every single day. I started him investing when he was in the fifth grade. And so his world is a little bit different when it comes to being able to multiply and make money. His story is a little bit different.
Langston, do you believe that millennials handle their money better than the generation that came before them?
Absolutely. 100%.
Why?
There's a new, well, I know from speaking based off my perspective and why I say it. I feel like millennials have a different mind frame than those before us. We really believe in the savings and living our best life, so getting all your money that you can.
But see, just by saying that, living your best life, my interpretation of living mm-hmm. your best life and getting all the money you can is one thing to, as they say, get money. But the question is, what do they do with it? Because you could argue that millennials' mindset as it relates to money and finances, they're not buying cars, they're Ubering. They are less likely, at least in the D.C. metro area, they are less likely to be homeowners, which some would argue may be against the thought process of establishing generational wealth, because they're renting. And if they live in big cities such as the DMV, it is so much more expensive to live here. They may be more transitional or mobile, but that doesn't necessarily does that suggest to you that they are better with their money, since they may be more likely to spend.
Well, when you spend it like that, you make it sound like, you know, we're not well off. But a lot of us are doing those things like renting and Ubering because we are saving and stacking for the bigger picture. A lot of us are really doing entrepreneurships. We have stakes in things. We're investing. We're creating a content. We're influencing. So we're getting revenue from everywhere.
Yeah. Mm. I just think that revenue is not the same thing as assets. And so I think one of the things that millennials go after is freedom. So I hear them say all the time, I just want to be free. I want freedom. But they don't understand that true freedom is in the power of your balance sheet. It's in the power of your assets, not the apps on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a big difference in having your money work for you in that way, which millennials, you know, there's no guarantee. You know, you invest in a new startup or new business. There's no guarantee that you're going to get a return on that. Right?
Right.
And so I don't know too many people, even though you may save at a greater rate, is it really working for you the same way?
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about you and your monies, millennials specifically, as a matter of fact. Are they doing it better when it comes to handling their money? If you are a millennial or if you are a parent of a millennial, what do you think? I'd like to hear from you at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Greg, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Good evening. Well, first of all, I do want to mentioned your guest who referenced her two sons. They are pretty much, in my opinion, an exception to the millennial generation. I'm a boomer, and I work with a lot of millennials, and I observe their spending habits. And I think there's exceptions to the rule, like your caller's sons. But in general, I think most of them live for today. I see the way they spend, and the first thing that comes to mind when on payday is not saving or investing. It's spending it and having a good time, whether it be sushi or out, just hanging out. And they live for today. I will say that they do take a lot of risk and they do have a lot of confidence in themselves. But I don't see that they're very good stewards with their money on a regular basis.
Okay. Thank you so much, Greg. What do you think about that, Langston, about what Greg is saying about being good stewards over their money? And indeed, what does that, from your mindset, what does that mean to you?
Well, I guess where he's looking at it from is that, you know, we live in that, the YOLO lifestyle. You only live once.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Daughter lives by that, by the way.
But personally for me, I want more. So,
what does that mean? That's an interesting thing. What does wanting more mean?
So, I want to pass this, what I'm doing on to my future.
Legacy,
correct. Mm-hmm. So, I want to know that when I'm done with this, I left a mark, not only just for myself, but for my family and for kids and future, you know, from that part. Me, I say, when I get my paycheck, some goes in this account, some goes in this account, and I can't touch it. I got my IRAs and my CDs. I actually look into that stuff. So for me, speaking from my millennial perspective, it's because I want to do better than what my family's done.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're how old?
I'm 29.
How did you get that money mindset? Where did it come from?
Being broke.
That's a motivator.
it really can
and,
be.
Just seeing, and not just my family per se, but just seeing other people where I grew up and around, and seeing, you know, like the hardships and the type of problems they get into, or the binds they get into, and they don't have the funds to get out of it. And I'm like, wow, no emergency fund, no something just there in case. So that's like inspired me to do more, save more, want to, you know, break that mold.
Mm-hmm. Now, I mean, he makes a really interesting point, LaShawn, because I would argue that for the boomers and those in between, the millennials and the boomers, that, you know, that mindset, and I would say, you know, because of, you know, ups and downs in the economy, you know, we've, of course, had the Great Recession. Back in the early 2000s.
We've had 2001, and then we had 2008,
mm-hmm.
Right? So we've seen two. They haven't seen those recessions.
But to that point, one, you could argue that those who were indeed responsible for those recessions were not of millennial age.
Absolutely.
They were of our age. And so whether they were running the banking system, the mortgage system, or buying houses that they could not afford, biting off more than they could chew, you could argue that they are not or did not do it as well as Langston's generation.
Well, they still have time, right? And so, that's one of the reasons that reading that article, I didn't necessarily feel like they were comparing apples with apples. One of the things that the article mentioned is how they delay having families in the millennial generation versus Generation X. We had kids, boomers, we had kids very early. And so they don't have to put food on the table the way we had to put food on the table. They don't have to provide for shelter the way we had to provide for shelter. And so our money did not stretch as far as their money has the ability to do because they don't have the same responsibilities. And so I think when you look at our age group, if we were the same age as them, when you look at the Pew report, they are not making more. They're not saving more than we were at the same age when you look at apples to apples.
Thoughts?
My thought is, if you're putting it in that, you know, perspective, then when you guys were our age, why wasn't the decisions that we're making now the decisions you guys made then?
You look at the information that's out here now versus the information that was out here then. And so you guys grew up where you have access to the internet. You have global information. I didn't have a cell phone growing up. I didn't have anything at the tips of my fingers where I could Google anything. I couldn't call on Siri and say, Siri, what is, you know? And so I think globalization, everything nowadays has been decentralized. And so globalization has changed and added a lot into that. And so again, we're not comparing apples to apples. And so we didn't know what was available. You only know what you know, right? And so nowadays you guys get to go on social media or, you know, a new whatever news medium that you look at online and you can see what's possible. Back then, we could only see what our neighbors were doing or what the kids at the school was doing. We didn't have a global outlook of what was possible for us or what was available, not in the way that millennials had. You're the generation that grew up off of game systems. You're the generation that grew up off of the internet. We didn't have the internet when we were younger.
You know, and I would agree with that because now you can watch a football game, a baseball game. You can watch a comedy on television. And when the commercials come up, what might you see during the course of that time? You may see commercials about investments.
Right.
Merrill Lynch, or you may see TD Ameritrade or something like that.
E-Trade.
And there may be, all you have to do is be a little curious. But I would argue that for my father's generation, learning about investments, during the 60s, for example, that to find that information about money management, short of talking to his father, who grew up in the South on a farm, you did not have the access to that information. And so I think to your point, information is king. And because you may have more information, you do have the options to perhaps do better with that information.
Most definitely. And then you talk about in the 60s, if the information was there, they weren't allowing African Americans to do it.
That's true.
I mean, we couldn't even buy homes. And so, you know, they weren't lending African Americans money to buy homes in my grandparents' generation. And so you look at it, information does change things. It's, you know, and, you know, knowledge is not power. I think applied knowledge is power, is what I like to say. But you have to have exposure to that. You have to have an environment, you know, that exposes those different things to you. We didn't have it. You guys have it at your fingertips.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about money. Do millennials do it better when it comes to your finances? Joycelyn, calling from Virginia. Quickly, what's on your mind?
Hi, I think that millennials are incredibly savvy when it comes to how we manage our finances, in part because of what you all were just talking about in terms of the access of information that we have, but also learning from previous generations and being able to do things a little differently. And there's a lot more, I guess, exceptions to the rules than just a few, than your two sons and the lady's two sons or whomever, because among myself and my millennial friends, we all are doing well, and we all came from humble beginnings. And I bought my first house at 25 in the DMV area. So I feel like we are incredibly savvy, and we know how to share information with each other, and we know how to go out there and make better decisions.
Interesting. Thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about millennials and money. Are they doing it better? Are they handling their finances better than their parents? How do they do it? And what mistakes might we all be making? Mm-hmm. Brittany, I believe it's Brittany calling from D.C. Robert calling from D.C. Please do not hang up. We will be talking to you in just a moment, so you will be able to hear the program. So please stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141. If you're having difficulty getting through, please keep trying. I promise we will take your phone call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about your money and their money, specifically millennials. Do they do it better when it comes to their finances? My guests are financial coach LaShawn Holland and journalist and social media influencer Langston Vincent, the media prince. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Zero. Robert calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Robert. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I'm agreeing with you. We do have a lot more at our fingertips, you know, with technology now. Especially now, you can even take courses online. Anyway, and you, like you said, the young man said, you're investing in startups. But I think some of the challenge with millennials, you correct me if I'm wrong, what I've observed is that many of them, the ones that have gone to school, are saddled with so much debt. You know, that sometimes they don't have the money always to invest. Now, I know you can, if you want to invest a little bit, like say $50 at a time, say $50 a week, you know, adds up over a 30-year, 40-year period, you know, just for example, or even $100. But, you know, I think the challenge is that, you know, the economy is changing, you know, whereas now you could roll the ball by yourself, you might need two people to help you, you know, even afford something like a $2,000 apartment, $2,500 mortgage, you know, whereas before maybe you could do it by yourself. And, you know, the money's just not there for everybody or as many people as there used to be. I should say that.
Mm. Robert, so, can we say a $3,000 apartment or a $4,000 mortgage?
And that's real in this area. And it's spreading all over the country, you know, not just, you know, especially any major city,
yeah.
You know, whether you're in New York, Chicago, Philly, look at San Francisco, look at Seattle, you know. You're right, $3,000 or $4,000.
Yeah, absolutely.
Crazy.
Robert, thank you so much for your input. What about that, Langston? Because when you're talking about, you know, your peers, some of whom have only been out of college for about 8 years or so, and whether they, you know, whether they've gone to large schools or even small schools, a lot of them are saddled with debt. What impact does that have on the financial decisions that they make?
A lot. honestly, because the debt is extremely high. And sadly, 9 out of 10, we need that degree to get these high paying jobs. I know for me and a lot of my peers, we got into a lot learning about debt consolidations and a lot of these refinancing programs for college debts that help put that down. But that information, you have to also be looking to learn that. Because my idea is I want my credit score to go as high as it can go to. So in what ways can I get this debt out of my way? So I'm constantly learning that. And I think now what's the difference between then and now is when we find out something, we're sharing it. We're having these panels. We're having these sessions. So that's how we're getting the word out as far as that. So that's the one area you can look into if you are going to college. But I also try to stay too. If you're in school as a millennial, get good grades, because there are scholarships out there that we know nothing about.
Mm-hmm. You know, he just said an interesting thing, LaShawn, about the sharing of information. And the TD Bank study was saying that millennials – They're very transparent. They don't have a problem talking about money. Where, your generation, my generation, when you even think about having a conversation about money, it's like clutch the pearls, mind your business, and stay away.
Definitely, they don't do it, and a lot of that comes with the stigma of shame and being uncomfortable, because we know we should be further along than what we are, but we're also the sandwich generation. And so something that they don't have, we're in the process of not only raising our kids, but taking care of our parents too. And so we're sandwiched in. And so we don't want to tell someone, hey, I don't have, you look at the statistics, you know, the average African American doesn't have $200 in savings. We don't want to tell someone that I'm 48 years old and I don't even have access to $200 in savings. And so, you know, those things are the reason why we don't want to open up and talk to people and be transparent about our finances. And so, which is true, my kids talk to their friends all the time about money. I mean, it's probably a daily conversation with them, either tagging him or, you know, picking up in their group chats, and they're talking about money. They're very vocal about it.
Mm-hmm. Kim, calling from Largo. Kim, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was calling because I'm a single parent. I have one son, and my question was, I don't know how to invest. I hate to say, just like she says, you know, you as an older person, you get to say you don't have or don't know or something. But I don't know how to invest. But I want him to be a better person to invest. So how can I get him to start learning these tools or these things to get him on the track to be better than me? I'm in a position now where I'm financially able to do a lot more with investment, but I want him to start learning it. So what can I do with that?
That is such a great question. How old are you, Kim?
I'm 48.
48, okay. LaShawn, that's your peer.
That's my peer.
Right.
Yes. How old is your son?
He'll be 19 in January.
Okay. So one of the things that I did very early on, I actually used to pay my sons to read books about mindset and investing and money. But there's a lot of different courses out there now that you can take. There are a lot of different books out there now. I started my kids reading. I'm sure you've heard of Robert Kiyosaki before. So they could understand the concept of investing and, you know, understand the concepts of a cash flow quadrant, where you make your money and the system mastery and inside of investing. And so I started them off with reading books. And so I would pay them to read books. Also, my son started investing when they were in the fifth grade, because I'll never forget, he wanted to buy these pair of Jordans.
They were $380.
And so I was not spending $380 on a pair of Jordans. And so I was always making the example so they can see. I would tell him, you're Michael Jordan's asset and he's your liability. And so I started changing the language that I would use when I would talk to them. And so if you're going to buy it, at least get stock in his company so they can send you a dividend or send you a check every quarter. And so he actually did that with OneShare.com. And so there are things now, there are apps that they have. Acorn is one of my favorite apps that I tell young adults to download on their phone. If they're going to be using their debit card and shopping anyway, why not use an app that, you know, if you're spending $1.50 somewhere, they'll up it to $2 and they'll take that 50 cents and put it in the market to work for them. And so there are things that they can start doing now with their money to help educate them. Acorn is another app that gives you a lot of investment education. So there are things that you can start doing now. In reading classes, I invested in, you know, an investment class for my son. And that's why he's able to do, you know, the work that he's doing. But now he's launching his own program, Stock Options Made Easy, for young millennials to come join in so they can learn how, you know, to multiply their money in the market.
Before we let you go, Kim, LaShawn, do you have something that you want to share with her? Because the thing that struck me was she wants her son to know about what she does not.
Yeah.
And she's 48. She still has time. What would you quickly recommend for her?
Well, the first thing I would tell her to go is to LaShawnHolland.com and sign up to get on my list so I can actually start working with her. I give a lot of resources out with financial education to help people raise their financial IQ. We really concentrate on not just money mastery, but learning how, what the different asset classes are, the cycles and bubbles, how to invest to that. And so it's just giving you access to a different kind of knowledge, a different kind of education.
Mm-hmm. And from your perspective, Langston, for young people who may not, I mean, you're 10 years older than her son, but you were, you know, 19 once. How do you get a young person? How do you capture their attention when it comes to dealing with financial issues, particularly if they are not really thinking about it at 19, 20, 21?
Exactly.
To be quite honest, you try to, due to the new social media era, that's the first thing they want to go to is, how can I get straight that? The first thing I would say to someone that's like 19 is, where do you see yourself in life and exactly which route are you going to go there? That's the first thing you have to ask. Because
how do you get there from here?
Exactly. Because that's where you'll find your answer of how you can navigate the conversation. Then that's where you put your input in. Start reading. Like you said, I would have loved.
If I would have paid you.
Yeah, they paid
right.
you. But it's little things like that, initiatives. For me, I always had a job since I was 15. I just liked.
Having your own.
I liked having money. And my mom instilled that into me, too. She wanted me to do better than she did. I mean, she's doing great, but she wanted to make sure I was that one that learned from that. But definitely bringing into them. And also, too, I try to tell people, don't spoil. Though we are the millennials, so we have everything kind of get to us, the iPads, the iPhones. A good thing about me as a millennial is I grew up with these things. They weren't already here when I got here, so I worked for them. So with me getting work ethic allowed me to want to learn how can I continue this work ethic on. So that's what the first thing you try to do is instill the work ethic. From there, the knowledge comes. You're going to want to know more. You want to do better. You get that first paycheck in your hand.
Yeah, don't lose your mind. Kim, thank you so much, and good luck to you and your son. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Erica, calling from D.C. Erica, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm Erica's son, Malachi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm 16 years old, and a good thing about assets and liabilities, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, and I'm currently reading Tim and Fertitta is the owner of the Houston Rockets. Shut Up and Listen. And a great thing about the asset column is it shows you, from Robert's perspective, it shows you what's the difference between an asset and a liability. I have money in the stock market currently, And what really drove me with this passion is I was 13 and I saw an ad on YouTube by a man named Ty Lopez. And the first thing that was in his car was, I mean, his video was here in my garage. It was four Lamborghinis, but around the Lamborghinis were actual books talking about how he used financial intelligence in order to acquire those assets. So I, myself, I'm invested in his course as well for social media marketing, and I'm learning how to get people to invest in me for my brain to help them market for their social media. And I'm doing that as I'm doing my schoolwork as well, because I want to own my own business. I don't want to work for the man. I want to be the man.
That's right.
And so with these assets, I know what, if I use my parents' money for anything, I always make sure I give them their money right back. And with a lot of people, they say, here is $10, here's $20, go buy this and that. But they're really teaching their children just to depend on their parents. And by the time they're 30, 40, still depending on their parents, and they want to be rich, they're saying something, but they're not actually doing it. They're just saying words. A lot of kids, I work on my social media marketing program in my school, and a lot of kids are like, oh, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Because in the future, I pray every day. I say, I want to make X amount of money by the time I'm 30, so that I say it over and over and over again, so hopefully it manifests into the reality.
Well, let me, Erica's son, thank you. Thank you so much for sharing, and certainly good luck to you. You know, which brings me to another point. Erica's son, he is 16, and he said that there are people in his peer group who are asking, why are you doing that? So not everybody is getting that message.
Not everybody is getting that message, but that comes from training and exposure. You know, I know my kids made six figures by the time they were 12 and 13 years old with their first business. And so with them, you know,
they can take care of you now.
Not quite. But they do make their own money. And so when you said, I love the fact when you said it's important to know what their vision is, where they want to be in their life. And so you look at where you are and where you want to be. But the bridge that bridges, that brings that together is called opportunity. And so not all kids have the same opportunity. Evidently, somebody introduced Rich Dad to Poor Dad with him. And his classmates, his peers, somebody at home is not talking about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. Mm-hmm. So again, it's your level of exposure.
Yeah. So can we also say that might be a battle we have to go through too, being as though we want more, and you could possibly come from a family that's not trying to hear that. Go get your job, benefits, all that stuff. They're not trying to teach you financial literacy, access to liability, stocks, bonds, and all the other things that come with saving money. And you're trying to become that staple and break that mold. So that's another barrier that some millennials have to go through, because they're becoming the first one.
Not just millennials. Gen Xers go through that, too.
Well, and I also think that what Langston is talking about has to do with attitudes about money.
Yeah, and mindset.
Where, you know, and you're from D.C. This is a government town. And for generations, you know, particularly in the Black community, we, like you just said, we've heard from parents, whether you went to college or not, go get that good government job, because it provides benefits. It provides stability, and there will be government pensions and the like. Well, when the world began to change, I would argue that those that came before you, and in some cases even before me, were slow to change with it. And that became really problematic as views and attitudes toward money began to bubble up, when the information age really started to when we started being exposed to information age, a lot of us just didn't take advantage of that.
Most definitely. They're still afraid to go online to Amazon to order something. And so to think that they're going to log on to Choice Trade or TD Ameritrade to learn how, you know, to invest their money properly in futures or Forex or options, they're just not going to do it. And a lot of that is mindset, but to the era that they grew up in. So a lot of it is mistrust.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. People in the black community, they may have been more willing to put, you know, money in their mattresses as opposed to
most definitely.
And that is not without some validation.
Right.
You know, and we could have another conversation about racism and money and redlining and all of those other kinds of things. But let's go to Keisha. Calling from New Jersey. Hey, Keisha. Thanks for holding on. What's on your mind?
Yeah, no problem. And I think that what I'm going to say is kind of a segue into, or kind of the next step of what you're saying. For someone who's born in 79, but also had, like, young kids, and I also have been a people manager for many years, a lot of who have been millennials. And one thing that I noticed really with the millennials is that they are really quick to say that they did things maybe a little bit better than their parents, that they saved better than their parents. And I absolutely agree that they do save better than their parents did, especially as, you know, in the early 20 years. But the reason why is because the majority of millennials that I've worked with have lived with their parents, have used their parents' resources, and their parents have encouraged them to save in ways that they weren't afforded to do previously by their parents. So their parents are saying, okay, yes, save money, live here, live off our resources, you know, like be smart, be better with your money. But one thing that their parents didn't do is their parents and, you know, my parents and being like right on the cusp, like they didn't invest. So millennials, yes, they are better savers earlier, but they are not better investors. And the reason is because they have the benefit of their parents, but they do not kind of separate themselves and say, okay, now I have to do the, you know, my due diligence as a grown up to say, okay, yeah, I'm a good saver, but how can I make smarter, you know, decisions with my money and grow my you know, book of wealth? So that's kind of like, you know, where I see millennials, yes, have had a little bit of a benefit, but they also, if they really want to be better stewards of their money, like they need to do that extra diligence on their own to figure out how to invest.
Well, you know, that's another excellent point, Keisha. Thank you for bringing that to this discussion. And I mean, that is such a critical point. When you taught your children about money, and you said, how many kids do you have?
I have three.
You have three kids. The youngest is
20.
And that's the girl or the boy?
Yes, that's the girl.
Is she still living at home?
Yes, she is. She's in college. She's away in college.
Okay.
Yes.
So the other two, are they still living at home?
No, my youngest son is in graduate school. And my oldest son, yes, he does live at home.
Because, okay, so your oldest is still living at home.
My oldest is still living at home.
I would say that for my peers growing up, only one of my closest friends was given the option to stay home until he bought his first home.
Yeah.
The rest of us, I mean, our parents didn't kick us out, but we were not encouraged to stay home and save and buy. We were encouraged to work or to go back to school.
And neither was I. And I just and that helped shape how differently I felt for my children. You know, I feel like if someone did allow me to have a safe place to land where I could save my money to build, to go out and, you know, either start my business or start investing early, I didn't have that. Mm-hmm. I left home at 18, first generation in my family to graduate from a 4-year institution. And so,
That was a different kind of achievement.
It was a different kind of achievement. I worked three jobs to put myself through college. And so my kids had a very, very different story. But also one of the things that we stress, my husband and I stress to our children, we didn't want them to go out here, you know, and get strapped with having a mortgage so early. I wanted him. I knew what his dreams were. I knew what the vision is, what the vision is that he has for his life. So stay home and build. And so when you go out, you're not struggling. You're not behind. And so one of the reasons my husband and I put so much effort into being able to build something that our children can walk into is because we didn't want them to start from ground zero.
Mm-hmm. Which is all the more reason why, as I said earlier, your kids need to take care of you and your husband. But what do you,
hear that, Adam and Jonathan?
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, Langston, what do you think about what LaShawn just shared with us? And, you know, is that when you talk about your legacy, mm-hmm. and do you have children?
No.
You don't have children yet. So you have time to strategize and to plan when you have children and develop, you know, that. The family for which you were going to build that legacy, would you do it the way that she's doing it now, or do you have a different take?
Well, see, right now it's all about me. So
because you're a millennial.
But the thing is, I couldn't give to anything else until I get me where I want to get to. So mm-hmm. that's the overall goal. I'm like I guess I'm the prodigal one in my family. I'm the first one to graduate college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the one that's most awarded, most prestige, I guess.
You're the achiever.
Yeah, so my goal was I just always want more. Mm-hmm. So I've researched. I'm really big on reading, research, and just learning. If this is that, how did this become that, and where can we go?
But do you have a plan, or are you still just trying to figure do the financial figuring out for Langston?
Oh no, I'm fine. I'm getting into that now. Mm-hmm. So I have accounts with different places. I have investing in things. I have some stocks. I would give a nice achievement to my father's side of the family once I got to know them. At a good age, they really taught me into stocks and buying. So I got pieces of Microsoft, Google. We got stuff with YouTube. So I make sure that I'm putting, not only am I getting money, but I'm putting it in proper places,
yeah.
and also storing it away. So I have no access to it. So it has nothing right. else to do but to grow.
Right. So. Right. Which is awesome, but talk to me so when the market crash, we can save your money to say Google.
Let's do it.
there's that. So I mean, I have a few minutes.
And those are the things too that scare the millennials is when the markets crash.
And that's here's my question, and thank you for that. Who is most risk averse? Is are the millennials a little more willing to be to take risks, or are the Generation Xers? And I'm not talking about the folks that are just near retirement, but just again attitudes. Do you think that your peer group are ready to just kind of roll the investment dice a little more than the Generation Xers?
Of course.
Yeah,
I think so.
I agree.
And I think that's because we are of the age where it's, if you don't risk it, what's the gain? Whereas, of course, the generations before us are more prodigal. They think everything through before they've done it, whereas we are, take a chance.
We've had families to take care of. And so, we've had different things on our plate that we had to look at. But most definitely, I think their generation they're more apt to take a lot of risks. But again, it's because they understand a lot more, too. Mm-hmm. And so they're more savvy with their investment knowledge, than someone in Gen X who the only thing they've ever heard of was 401k on their job, and that's it. And they don't understand, it's a whole nother show if we talk about the 401k. I'm not a fan of the 401k, but you guys will take money in your own hands and say, okay, I'm willing to risk this because I'm willing to get larger returns.
Mm-hmm. And about the family piece, is it better for family young or family older? Because that's, I think that is the big, that's the big question. You said earlier that, millennials are waiting to have families. I would think that in waiting to have families that you are in, you end up spending more later, and you have less time to invest in and save or focus on investments and savings, as opposed to if you have your family earlier and then you get rid of the kids and you're still footloose and fancy free.
You know, I don't think so. I pray that my sons and my daughter wait years before they start their families. You know, that you start looking at the time value of money. Is a dollar or $10 worth more to me today? Or is it worth more if someone was to give it to me 5 years from now? If you give me the $10 today, I have the ability to compound it over a longer period of time. And so waiting to start, if I put my money in the market to work for me now, you know, I'll have money where my children won't have to get student loans because I've had my money working for me in the market where I can give them student, you know, I can pay for their college education. I can give them money for the down payment of their first home if need be. And so your market has the, your money has the ability to grow larger, further, and faster when you start earlier.
Mm-hmm. Langston, I'll let you have the last word.
I definitely think you should start later with that, with creating a family.
As for me, I'm
financially good, but I'm not financially great. And I'm working towards being financially great. I feel like once I get to my financially great, I'm able to bring another person into the situation. And now I can teach them the tools. I can now afford to give the life that I want to give them. And now I have the knowledge to share how you can get onto this wave. And now I have a kid. Once you are born, I can now start pouring money into you as soon as you're born, like investments.
But no $380 Jordans.
No, yeah. $380 Jordans. Now,
kid,
I will tell you, I did not buy the Jordans.
Yeah,
but
say.
I did give him money to invest in Nike. And so from fifth grade on till this day, he still gets a dividend check from Nike. And where most kids grew up, where they had their athletic heroes on their wall, my son had stock certificates on his bedroom wall.
Interesting, yeah. Ain't nobody got time for $380.
You're adopted,
not
me, right?
At all. I'm adopting you. You can come over. Come on, Langston.
LaShawn Holland and Langston Vincent, thank you both so much for coming in and chatting with us. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, November 20th. I'm Harold Fisher. Now, stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.